Welcome back to the Screaming Idiots Show, everybody. Once again, hope everybody's had a good week. Getting ready for the weekend. We got us a solo episode today. Figured we'd mix it up on y'all. We've had a couple guests on, and definitely want to thank all of our guests that have came on for Season 1 and Season 2, because they're, you know, spending their free time coming in and helping us make great content for you guys. So, want to shout them out for sure. Well, boys, you know, it's been a while since we've talked about the band and, you know, band business. And Tyler, I know that you had mentioned you had some topics you wanted to cover in regards to that. So I'm going to let you let it rip, buddy.
Yeah. So what I kind of wanted to talk about is the process from writing a song to then getting it into the studio. And there's a lot of bands out there that I realize don't really know what that process looks like or how to navigate it. And Preston, what do you think about how we were able to record some songs and kind of start dissecting them as we're writing them?
Well, I think it's provided a whole new perspective, because what we're used to doing is coming up with certain parts of a song and putting it together on the fly as a band at practice. Of course, there's a limited time frame that we're able to do that. So it's like practice upon practice upon practice. We're trying to build on maybe one song, and then we'll play through a set list of something else. And it's like, if only there was a way to have it in a computer to be able to hear it and build off of it.
Yeah.
And we had tried to do this a while back, but if I'm not mistaken, Tyler, I think it just came in like sound wise so shitty that we didn't want to run with it.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. I used what limited amount of microphones I had, trying to mic up the entire band, plus just I was trying to run the vocals straight out of our PA into the interface, and that did not work out well at all.
And that's been a while. That's been what? Shit, a year?
Well, I didn't really take the... I mean, that wasn't that long ago.
It feels like a damn year.
I'd say about 6 months. Okay. It's been a while. But, you know, what I learned from that, you know, there's some things, extra steps I got to take before I can do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what we've been working on lately. We got some new equipment to be able to record at least the band playing while we play. Just live jamming, going through songs.
Mm-hmm.
And since we don't really have many shows lined up, I think we had a discussion earlier this year about kind of focusing this year on writing new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we had talked about it on an earlier episode where, you know, we were kind of looking at having to make some decisions on, you know, what songs we have out there and really focusing on writing songs that actually compete with what else is out there so that we can really deserve the listeners that we want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of bands struggle with this process because most bands, the only thing they have access to is what we had before. Like you said, we would come in to the garage, hope that we can hear everything well, which we are fortunate in the space that we have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Most bands don't have this. You know, I remember jamming in a basement.
Right.
And I'm talking like a 1920s basement. You literally had to duck to get in between a floor joist, and then you could stand up straight.
Oh, shit. I wouldn't have that problem.
Well, you wouldn't have that problem. Scotty didn't have an issue. Motherfucker was sitting down the whole time anyway.
No, so I think it's really cool from a creative standpoint because we're able to plug it into this machine over here, this new technology.
It's new to us, guys.
Yeah.
It's new to us.
We're way behind y'all. But being able to plug it in and mess with the EQs and everything else, but then hear a playback of it, it instantly got my mind racing for other parts or what needs to be taken out, what needs to be messed with here. So I think it'll kind of spiral us into, at some point, once these are finished, maybe quicker than what we expected, wanting to record and get, which it was already on the plate to get new stuff out. Mm-hmm. But I think this might speed up that process a little bit more for us.
Yeah, and I think quality-wise, the songs that we're going to have written, we really thought that we had something. You said this before we started recording. We really thought we had something with some of these songs, and mm-mm. we're finding out that, like, they are not ready yet.
Mm-mm. Nope, nowhere close.
And we don't even have... Oops. You know, lyrics, you know, vocal parts to the songs yet. We're just dealing with the music, and we thought it was the coolest shit we had ever written. And to an extent, it is. It's yeah. just with more complex songs, there's it becomes more complex, piecing yeah. everything together. So,
and I think we've always critiqued our stuff to a certain extent, but now I feel like it's even more as of late. But no, I'm excited. It should, like I said, spiral us into wanting to record, but then there's a whole lot of writing that needs to be done way beforehand. And I don't know, I think we're on to something here.
Kyler, I don't want to exclude you from the conversation. I would actually be interested in hearing your, like, outside looking in take on the writing process, what you've seen, and as a musician yourself, you know, trying to write your own songs, things like that. How does a conversation like that, you know, help you figure out what you need to do musically?
Yeah, and that's an interesting question. And first off, I guess when it comes to the writing style, you know, I think Preston and I have mentioned it before on this show that, you know, our whole lives growing up playing guitar, we were just riff writers, mm-hmm. right? And I think Preston mentioned that when he first joined the band, he found that he had struggled with songwriting, you know, actually putting a whole song together from start to finish with, you know, riffs, breakdowns, bridges, mm-hmm. choruses, whatever it might be, adding all of that to, you know, a song is... incredibly complex, right? So
you would think it'd be simple, but I don't know, maybe I got writer's block or whatever, but.
Right? No, it's very revealing and eye-opening for me, because, you know, before the show I sat in here and listened to some of the recordings that you guys were just talking about, and it's cool to be able to have that, play it back over and over, and find bits and pieces that you need to work on, mm-hmm. need moved, need changed in some way, shape, or form. And like you said, you're very lucky to have that and this space to do that in. And me, as a musician, the only thing I've ever done is record it on my phone, right?
Right.
Play it back. I'm
right.
like, oh, okay, that's cool. I got that. Record something else, play it back. So, and it's shitty sound quality and shitty video quality and all that. So to be able to do it like this...
Mm-hmm.
is one, it makes me kind of jealous, which I can come over here and do it anytime I want, but
I got you.
You know what I mean? If we weren't, you know, best friends and I didn't know about this or didn't have access to this, I'd be like, you motherfucker. But fortunately I do, but I don't have it at home, you know? So it's a unique way to, fine tune your music. And, I wish that more people and more bands had access to this kind of, which they do, they just might not know it, you know, had access to a space like this and was able to record quality sound and be able to use that to create a final construction for their music.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know we're all, or not all of us, but most of us are some broke musicians. We have all yeah. these aspirations, but also all these other responsibilities that tend to hold us back. And if you can afford it, I would highly recommend finding even someone that's doing it in their bedroom, or maybe they have a decent spot like in here to be able to record some stuff. This isn't a perfect space, so hell, maybe you can get into a serious studio. But get in there and use that opportunity not to to rush it and save money by just blasting out what you already do. Take the time to listen to it and say, maybe I need to change some things, because although it's fun to play, it's not that fun to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've learned that about some of our songs, songs that I have a really fun time playing on the bass.
We put it all together.
You guys don't like the songs that much. And so we don't play them. But to me, it's fun to play. But like, how does that feel, taking that objective look at your music and say, fuck, man, I don't know that I would listen to that.
That ain't good enough. Yeah.
No, I don't mean to cut you off.
You're good. You're good.
So if I can put it into relatable terms, for all you just music fans out there.
Translate.
Yeah. Think about the song Escape by Metallica. The reason that they have never, well, I don't say have never, but will never play that song live is because when they listened to it, they said, one, this just doesn't have a great flow and it's not the easiest thing to play live. And two, it does not fit a live setting and it doesn't sound good when listened to. Now, a lot of Metallica fans out there, including myself, love that song, but the band is like, this is not a great listening experience. We're not playing it live. So there's my translation for what you said.
Mm-hmm. I think it also, I mean, it's a real honest assessment of yourself. Well, maybe not yourself, but as a band. But for me, what it also did was it felt easier that I could pick out, oh, that ain't right. And I don't mean by the notes that I was playing, but I mean just the flow of the song or whatever it is that we had wrote. It's like, nope, that's not it. And of course, everybody's going to have their different opinion. Or, okay, I like where we're going there, but something's got to be added or slightly changed. It made it easier for me to recognize it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I think so.
So, Kyler, have you ever been to, like, a real studio?
No.
Because this is obviously not a real studio.
No, if you're referring to, like, where you guys recorded Inhibitions, no, I've never been in a place like that. I've been in a janky-ass one, but not meaning like this, but, like, in high school.
This is kind of janky, though.
Well, fair enough, but janky.
This is the Beat Lab, people.
It's the Sanctuary.
This is the damn Beat Lab.
So, no, I have not, to answer your question.
So, if you decided, you know, hey, I want to write some songs, and I want to record them, what process would you go about?
Well, the I'm probably the wrong person to ask because I have access to this shit, right? So, let me remove myself from the situation, put myself in the shoes of someone that doesn't have that access. If you're really just starting out, right, and you've never recorded something before, maybe you're just starting to write music and this is some of the first stuff you've ever done, you're most likely not willing to or going to spend a bunch of money to get that stuff recorded, right? So you're going to find a buddy.
Yep.
Or, you know, one of your dad's friends or somebody that you know that is able to record and mix and whatnot. And it's probably going to be in the dude's garage or in the dude's basement or in the dude's bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the route you're going to go, because especially if you're a solo, you know, or a solo act or just getting started as a band, these guys, you know, don't have a ton of money to go and find a nice recording studio and pay the money to get it recorded and mixed and mastered and all that. So they're going to find a local guy that has the setup to record music and mix it. And that's what you're going to do. And that's what I would do.
That was a very good explanation.
Well, you know, I am a semi-professional podcaster. And an amateur musician.
So, Preston.
A shitty guitarist, if you recall what Preston said about me a couple episodes
ago. Oh, shit.
Shitty guitarist.
Damn it.
Never living it down. You're never
I didn't that say down. That.
The very next episode, you told Tyler he was a shitty bassist. Or called him a pussy.
I called him soft.
Yeah.
I seen that big ass fucking blister.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Go ahead, Tyler.
I'm insulted all over again. But what was the process that we went through as a band that was really taking it very serious? What was the process we went through to land at the studio we went to?
Well, we interviewed a couple, from what I remember, a couple guys that we felt like we would have vibed with, and all went well, but it was another slap in the face. Of course, it was my first time doing it, but thought I'd be prepared, thought I'd figure it out, and that wasn't the case. I struggled in the studio the first time, and it wasn't due to the environment or anything like that. It was mainly to do with myself, but I think the process was okay and all, but it would have been better if we were all more prepared leading up to it. Like,
so glad that you said that.
I think we all thought we were prepared, but of course, me and Tyler were kind of driving the whole thing to get recorded, and we put it all together somewhat quick. But yeah, I mean, I would say it was an okay experience.
Okay. So yeah, what Preston and I did was, first we went to the Google machine.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Technology
and things.
Mm-hmm.
But still new, promise you. But anyway, we started looking up, you know, studios, just easy Google search. And started looking through ratings, started looking through websites and figuring out which space looks like it's going to give us what we want. What we wanted was maybe not quite the quality you get from what, you know, these bands you listen to on the radio and stuff, because they got, you know, tens of thousands of dollars into producing these albums. Okay, so that's a house. I don't have that, or it's a car, you know, for some of the cheaper ones.
I mean, you have a house and you have a car, but
yeah, but I'm not willing to give those up for studio time.
Right. I just wanted to clarify.
So it's, you know, looking through these studios, and then we reached out and we set up, basically we wanted to walk through the studio first, and we wanted to meet the producer. We wanted to see who we was going to vibe with, who was most likely to get us what we wanted. And we ended up landing on this guy, Matt, at Vaughn Music Studios in Columbus. And I remember going, you know, we went to visit the one time, and I was a little bit seduced by the space.
Yeah, it was sweet.
It was a cool looking space.
Yeah, it was sweet.
I was a little bit seduced. And so, you know, we asked Matt, we told him, we were like, look, we've been to two other music studios. We had planned to meet a fourth. Why should we hire you? And he was honest, dude. He was like, look, I've never recorded a band like you guys. You know, the hard rock, the metal. He's like, it'll be a challenge for me. He's like, I'm really interested in it though. And he was like, other than that, the space.
Yep.
Like, yep. They do mastering in there. And to do true mastering, you have to have like a special fucking room.
Yeah.
And so being able to do a mix in that space, and we ended up just having another producer at that studio come in and do the master in that room. it was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. It was.
But we, I don't think we got quite what we wanted because we were not better prepared.
Yeah, I think we could have been able to analyze it back. I think we knew what we wanted, but it wasn't as if we were able to truly completely analyze through it. Like, and as stupid as it sounds, there's a question that we could have asked ourselves, and it was as simple as, is this us? And I still don't feel as if anything we've recorded has captured us as a band.
And that's why I'm so adamant about getting good at recording us play live. Because what we experienced with what we did is, though the mix wasn't quite amazing by any means, we still have some things to tweak mm-hmm. about how we're doing it to try to get a better sound. But I felt like listening to us play live on those newer songs was the closest I've ever heard Screaming Evidence recorded.
Yeah. Yep.
So what advice would you guys give to a local band out there that is going into that first album recording or first EP, first single, whatever, that at first initial recording process? You know, it's Preston, like you said, you'd never done it before, and it was
it was all new.
What advice would you guys give to those folks out there that are headed towards that process or have already got it scheduled, whichever?
So for a guitarist, when you practice at home, play with a metronome, because that was a bitch for me. Yeah. I never realized how off time I am as a player, as a musician.
Oh, bro,
until I started messing with that metronome, and I would just be slightly off. But if you're, it fucks up the whole thing.
Yeah.
If you're off time, but as a band, go into it knowing what you want out of the sound. And I know that's kind of a broad way to explain it, but
it makes perfect sense.
When you play music with guys, you have an idea of what sound mm-hmm. you either have or are after.
Well, we sent Matt some examples
uh-huh.
of what we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, hey, we really like this band's mix. We like the sounds from these guitars. We like the vibe of some of these Deftone mm-hmm. albums. Things like that, but that's just not what we got.
Yeah.
And like you said, it was being pushed into a studio probably quicker yeah. than I should have let you.
Uh-huh.
And I don't mean that as like,
no, I get it,
being dad, but like I was driving so hard to get that album done mm-hmm. and pushed because
something out there.
I finally had a partner
yeah.
on the business side.
Yeah.
Which was you. And your excitement through the process drove me. And I was like, we got to get this album recorded. We got to push.
Yep.
We got to push. This is our chance.
As cheesy as it sounds.
Yep. Well, we can get into the momentum discussion in a minute, but like, I really pushed you into it, man. We didn't take the time to, like, I had everything we needed for us to record parts and start working on layers and stuff
mm-hmm.
before we went in.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was also working with Scotty to get him ready
uh-huh.
for the studio because it was this situation of, you know, Scotty has a hard time playing with a metronome.
Yep.
And that
it sounds like the people that grew up like with pure thrash that have problems with the metronome.
Do you remember me?
You, Scotty?
Do you remember me and Scotty?
Yeah.
In the studio, yeah. I was doing this to help.
He
him
was
stay
like
on
helping
time.
Him with time. Scotty's looking over. Oh, it was hilarious.
Still Scotty's, getting a stick spin in every yeah. now and then.
Scotty's such a visual dude that like he yep. had to see that beat.
Yep.
And he's like that sometimes, but it worked.
Yeah, it did.
Was so cool.
Yep.
But like of all of our preparations, Had we just figured that out?
Well, and there was like...
It would have saved us like 5 hours in the studio.
Yeah, and I think because of the pressure that was put on us, probably mainly me and Scotty, because it's something you and Sean can breeze through quite a bit. Like, when you listen, or at least when I listen back through what we had put out, there's no jam factor to it. Like, it feels like it's so... He was trying not to fuck that up. And of course, I analyze everything I do when it comes to playing, but as a band, it felt like we're trying not to fuck this up. Play it right here, and it, there was no freeness
too
to
tight
it.
Is what
yeah,
you're
it
saying.
Was too
yeah.
tight. It's uptight. It just didn't feel relaxed. It wasn't us.
Does that sound like a fun experience?
No.
Oh, we're no. yelling at each other in there, right in front of this dude that barely knows us.
No, that but hey, that man. Right there is metal as fuck. Go watch Some Kind of Monster and see what those dudes did for that.
I thought Scotty was ready to kill
he
Tyler.
He fucking quit the band.
He did. He walked out of that motherfucker.
Oh, man. We was at each other's throats because yep. I was like, dude, we've worked on this.
Yes. And that's where I say we thought we were prepared and we weren't. And the result that we got was not us, and kind of mainly our own fault.
We didn't look at it objectively
yeah.
and say,
we were just
are
excited.
We ready?
We were just excited.
Just excited in the yeah. moment, the enthusiasm to yep. push on something like that as a band is a super thrilling experience.
It is exciting.
And we allowed ourselves to rush it. So yep. if I had any advice...
You'll probably hear that when you listen to it.
For any band that's wanting to do that, it's you got to be prepared. You got to be able to play with a metronome. You got to have your songs ready to be recorded in a way that people are going to want to listen to. And that is my TED Talk.
Yep.
That's fair. And I think it's that's all good advice for any up and coming bands listening. So it's, I can imagine that first recording experience is very daunting and very, well, maybe not, you know, just the first, but obviously you do it once or twice, you start getting used to
especially
it.
Especially if you don't have a previous relationship with a producer
yeah.
or whoever. Yeah.
It's all new and yep. you know, that can be a lot to take in. So I think the key there is relax,
yep.
be prepared, practice with a fucking metronome.
And make sure wherever you're recording, something about it feels like home.
Yeah.
Like, if you feel like you can't be yourself as a musician while you're recording, it ain't right.
Did you still have fun in the
Oh,
end,
I had a blast.
Yeah.
Like I said,
I think
had
that's
a blast.
Important to mention too, because I don't wanna paint this too dark for you know,
yeah.
look, don't be scared of it.
Right.
You're still gonna have fun because
yeah.
if you're in recording music, you obviously love what you're doing, you have a passion for it, so still try to enjoy
that's
it.
That's a good point, because there's I realize that looking back on it now, there needs to be a level of fun and leisure because it allows the creative to come out mm-hmm. while you're there.
And you're also not.
But there needs to be real structure to it too, because sure. it'll get off the rails.
Yeah.
And then you're spending, you know, as that time clock keeps going, you're spending money.
It's a very fine
yep.
line
yep.
of trying to balance, hey, let's keep this fun. Let's not stress ourselves out, make ourselves miserable, but let's also stay on task.
Yeah.
Have a schedule.
Yep.
Be you know, focused in our goal here.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to balance those two can be challenging, I'm sure. Tyler, right. You got something to say? You looked at me with intent.
No, so I have an interesting thing. I brushed over it a little bit ago, but it's the momentum talk.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah.
And I think it'd be a cool discussion because it goes right in line with what we're doing with the podcast.
Sure.
And
yeah. Explain.
Preston, do you remember any of it?
Refresh me. I have ADD.
I don't think that makes you forget things, but sure.
Okay. It's just my excuse. I shouldn't make fun of that.
Well, you and I had this conversation early on in you getting involved with the business side of the band.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of building momentum.
Okay.
And so...
I think I know where you're going.
Yeah, so it's the idea of you put something out there to get people's attention. A single, an album, some whatever content you put out there to get mm-hmm. them excited. And it gets you, you know, going upward a little bit, going up the hill, and then it'll plateau, and it'll start dying off. Whatever the excitement is around this thing that you did, that excitement is just going to drop off. But you have to have something there.
Yeah.
Once you feel the plateau, you have to have something ready to drop.
Yep.
And you fucking drop it. And you keep that momentum going upwards, up the hill. And when that starts to plateau, drop. And that's where this idea of album cycles goes. Back, you know, going back to the 70s. I mean, even earlier than that. But in the 70s, that's when albums seem to really be the way people wanted music. They wanted this big chunk all at once.
Yeah.
This big
chunk.
This
goes back to
music.
Our binging conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, excuse me. So you have to start considering the trends that are out there. And I think that's why so many bands are releasing half of their fucking album as singles leading up to the drop of the album. And it's because people's they want a good amount of content all at once quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why these bands are switching to releasing singles, but still having the album behind it.
Yeah, but
or EP after EP after EP.
And we can either delve into this conversation now or, yeah, we can. It's a side combo. Maybe we'll get to it later, but we've started to bitch about bands dropping
four or five
singles and then only having another 4 to 6 songs on the rest of the album. Yeah. Like, yeah. That's the wrong way to fucking do it.
I agree.
The sad reality is
that's just from a listener, too. Mm-hmm. That's not from, like, me thinking about my... That's just from a listener.
Currents have already dropped 4 singles off their new record.
Right.
I mean, I'm still excited for it, but it's like, fuck.
Yeah.
That's a lot of singles,
give me
man.
3 of them, and then give me 9 others when the album drops. Exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, that's because what people really want is they want the whole album, but they want you to release, you know, 2 albums a year.
Yeah. Or an album in a year.
Yeah, like, that's what people really want you to do. They know you can't feasibly do that, but that's what they really want.
That's why I think a lot of country artists these days are dropping double albums.
Mm.
Morgan Wallen, Cody Johnson, Luke Combs drops a bunch of shit all the time.
Yep.
I mean, so you've got all these country artists that are dropping either like 30 song albums or an album a year, or an album and an EP a year. They're or a single. They're doing features. They're constantly putting out. Country music has done a fantastic job of capitalizing on constant content, but metal bands, I feel like, are still trying to catch up to that because, one, there's a whole lot more to produce a metal song than
it's more
song.
Creative.
Way more.
Most of the time.
Yeah. So the time constraint is obvious, but
I'm glad we got into this conversation.
Yeah, no, but it falls into, you can also default back on the relevancy conversation.
Yeah.
I love Polaris just as much as you do. They're not very relevant right now.
Nope.
They haven't dropped new music in a long time. And all these, I understand they're on the road, they've been touring, all that, but they're, I mean, even for me, like, bro, I've heard all their shit so many times. Like, I'm kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
I love Polaris. I'm desperate for them to drop new music. We say it almost every fucking day.
When's that?
I actually listened to Mortal Coil yesterday in the gym.
I've gotten back into all I've gotten back into all their older
stuff. I mean, we played the Dichotomy. Death of Me till it fucking burned out. Till it fucking burned out.
So I've gone back and listened to Dichotomy, the first album, and then their other EPs just to get in some older shit because they're not putting anything new out. So that falls back on your depiction of momentum and plateauing, and you know, Polaris is going down here with the relevancy and their momentum because they're not releasing any new shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's just there's what people want, and then there's what people get, and people are not satisfied with what they're getting.
No,
and so that's why you know, you and I really had that conversation about how should we do this podcast and release our content and start mm-hmm. building momentum. And it was like, well, to make sure that we have solid content for extended period of time, it's let's go ahead and record a whole season.
Yep.
Yep.
Release it out there for those who want to binge it, because we know there's a lot of people that want to binge their content.
Yep.
And some have already told us as such.
Exactly.
Well, and I know as a podcast listener myself, I do the same thing.
Yeah, I binge.
Like, I get on Colin Cowherd's show and I'll mm-hmm. 3 1-hour episodes back to back to back, mm-hmm. like throughout the day.
Yeah, and so with what we've decided, we're able to essentially do what these metal bands and stuff want to be able to do,
yeah,
but they can't. We're just basically releasing albums every few months.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
We're calling them seasons, but when you think about it, that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the folks that are going to listen to us and join the Backstage Pass on Patreon,
mm-hmm.
they're going to get an entire album, essentially, of shows and all the bonus content that we do in between seasons.
Yep.
So they are tapping into that binge factor. Then there's some people that, you know, whether you're a casual listener of the show or you're just discovering us and you want to find out if you like us, you're just listening to it weekly.
Yeah.
And then it might evolve into a binge. It might not. So mm-hmm. it's just different people's tastes, you know. Yeah. That's why we're trying to do this to fit everybody's taste, right? We've got YouTube, we've got Patreon, we've got all the podcasting platforms, we've got TikTok, we've got Instagram now. So we're going to, you know, we've been doing reels and stuff, short clips and whatnot. So we as a podcast are trying to tap into each person's desires, right? And not just be so one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of content out there that, in my opinion, is good, but is one-dimensional in the means that there's only one way to digest it.
Yeah.
I work in agriculture, right? And I'm going to take you for a quick
trip.
Let's
go,
here.
Baby.
So
let's go.
When we feed
me the corn.
So we're going to talk about corn.
Give me that cash crop, baby.
Here's my agronomist background, my agronomy degree coming out. When you think about corn, number one nutrient important to corn is nitrogen, right? And if we continue to apply nitrogen in only one form, meaning anhydrous, the white tanks you see,
mm-hmm.
28%, 32% urea, whatever it might be, if we continue to only apply one form of nitrogen one time in one way, we're not going to progress any. It's going to stay stagnant. Our yields are not going to increase over time. But if we mix it up, we use different forms of nitrogen, we put some starter fertilizer on the planter and then follow it up with a side dress pass of 28 at V5, none of that makes sense
here
to anybody listening. Go.
I'm following, baby.
So we're addressing multiple. I have a saying, and it's multiple forms of nitrogen, multiple passes. So multiple forms of content at multiple times. It's the same theory. So we're trying to be diverse as a podcast and mm-hmm. put multiple forms of content out there for all of our viewers to enjoy. If you got, I mean, our YouTube videos have started doing really well,
mm-hmm.
and that's because a lot of people absorb content on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to be as versatile as possible for our listeners. And I think that's what a lot of bands these days are trying to do, but are struggling to do, because they still want to put out quality content.
Yeah.
None of these bands want a half-ass album.
No.
Out there. So they're trying to figure out, hey, how can we please our fans? Oh, I have an idea. We're going to make this kick-ass album, but we're going to release 4 or 5 songs off of it as singles, so fans can binge content until we drop the actual album.
Too bad it's only got another 3 songs.
Right. That's the unfortunate part. So,
well, and the other part of it, dude, it takes stuff like this, and especially with a band, like when you're trying to stay relevant and keep doing things, it takes a lot of your time, man.
It does.
A lot of your time.
So going back to advice for bands, it would be not only be prepared for the studio time and all that going into doing this album, but are you ready to go right back into that process so that you got a fucking round in the chamber?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you show a little patience and wait till you're ready to do both and give you plenty of time to get number three out there so that you can release them within at least a year of each other.
Yeah.
And that's how you build momentum, my guy. Like,
it's just like what we're doing with this season right now, because this was where we decided to do the season thing.
Yeah.
So we've been busting our ass time-wise to crank this season out in a couple weeks. So it's no different, because we're trying to keep a round in a pipe. We're trying to keep a round in the chamber. So it's the same exact same thought process, and it's for any form of it's just content. It is how you have to be prepared to put out quality content that's going to keep people interested and start, like you said, Tyler, building that momentum and maintaining that momentum by continuously putting out good content.
And what does Bo say on the show? It's an instantaneous society or something, where he's talking
about. It is.
About,
it is an instantaneous society. All this, so he's referring to a sports show that we listen to, and the host talks about how we consume media today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He talks about his kids a lot. It's all at their fingertips.
Yeah.
It's all on their tablets or on their computers or on their smart TVs.
Yeah.
Content is immediately available right now.
Yeah.
That is, it's just at our fingertips. And, you know, when we were younger,
we get bored so easy.
We didn't have that, right? You had to watch this cartoon at this time on this station on this day. And that's the way.
And the time in between, you figured out something to fucking do.
That was it. And we didn't get bored.
Yep.
But nowadays, we are so used to having everything at the tip of our fingers.
We get bored, man.
That once we consume it and we're done with it, we're immediately
something
on to
else.
The next thing.
Yep. Yep.
So if you want to be relevant as a band, as an artist, as a podcaster, as a social media influencer, whatever it is, you have got to find a way to keep people from getting bored.
And we're trying to figure that out this whole time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Just you guys as a
band.
It's
not like we're experts on this by any means.
I mean, we're learning with you guys.
Exactly.
So
it's and it's cool that the listeners and viewers are able to see that
and
journey
as
time
goes.
Yeah.
We actually had a really good plan.
Yeah, we did.
We were doing a two-part album.
Yep.
And so it was going to be six songs on each.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to release them within a year of each other. So it was going to be kind of like putting out albums, but it was just going to be focusing a lot of energy towards 12 songs, release them at separate points so that we can give ourselves breathing room to have another album ready to deliver by the time the momentum started falling off of part two.
Yep.
But it was going to be a heavy grind to get part one and part two done, because once we finished recording part one, we went in for our, I guess, kind of live run through
of the newer songs to give him an idea. Yeah, that's right.
And he recorded us playing them live.
Yep.
And so it was going to be our opportunity to play around with, you know, taking a little bit of time to play around with some layers and stuff, and then get right back into the studio to
just to be ahead of the game and be ahead of the game.
And then COVID.
Yep. That's right. It killed it. I thought we just got lazy. Damn, it was COVID.
No, it was
COVID. It was COVID that wrecked it for us. And then after COVID really started to dissipate, we just stayed lazy.
Yeah, yeah. And then life happened. Yep.
Babies.
And now you're trying to get back into the swing of things. So it's just a process. And I think you guys are doing a good job this time around of, like you said, you know, with the recordings in house, you're doing that preparedness.
It's a lot quicker. It's going to be a lot quicker because we get together once a week.
Yeah.
That once a week, we can do whatever the hell we want rather than go to the studio once every 3 weeks or whatever it is.
No doubt.
Yeah,
I think you guys have touched on a lot of good points there and given some good advice to all the up-and-comers that listen to the show. So did we miss anything?
Well,
that's
for anybody, again, in regards to the momentum.
I mean, we can talk about it for hours.
Yeah, let's.
We don't have hours. I want to hear some hot takes. I want to get pissed.
So we haven't we've been bouncing around doing some new topics, doing some this or that, doing some top fives, but we can't forget completely our OG topic of heavy metal hot takes. So we're going to dive into that because it's been a while and it's a fucking blast to get y'all riled up. So I'm going to start here with one that I saw on Twitter today, and this is from the State of the Scene podcast. I'm sure if you listen to us,
this is going to be an hour
too,
conversation so. In yeah. itself.
So this is a tweet from the State of the Scene podcast, and I'm reading, and I quote, "The three most important metal bands are Slipknot, Metallica, and Linkin Park," end quote.
I'll
say it again.
Whew.
The three most important metal bands are Slipknot, Metallica, and Linkin Park. And by most important, you think most influential, biggest impact, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, they had to, like, pave a way for something.
Now, one of those is obvious.
Yeah.
Okay? Yep. And Tyler, being the Metallica hater that he is, might disagree, but... You know, Metallica, that one's pretty hard to argue as far as one of the most impactful.
Do we have to explain what impact they made or what they did?
We don't have to explain it, but I got a couple bands on my arm here that are heavily influenced by Metallica. So it is more than one. As much as you hate Thrice, their guitarist is in love with Metallica.
Yeah.
He started out just like you two, where it was...
That was it?
It was riffage
then
all the time.
What turned him into...
Well, if you listen to his guitar parts...
Hall & Oates.
In the first few albums...
I love Hall & Oates,
Mumford
bro.
And
Sons. I love Mumford.
We're going to get mad in here.
Fucking Dave Matthews Band.
But look, I'm getting flustered. I'll get... Yeah, choke, bitch.
On that BDSM, baby.
Oh, fuck. And we've gone completely off the
rails. Off the rails, baby.
Hey, were the quotes BD or the fucking chords BDSM?
I hope
we'll be right back after a short break, everybody.
I hope everybody laughed at that part as much as we did, man.
Oh, man. That joke.
We're taking a break.
You calling me a fucking shitty guitar. No, we're not taking a break.
No, we ain't taking a break. We're good.
You calling me a shitty guitarist and the BDSM thing will never, ever go away. But
anyways.
So, yeah, you know, you're talking about Thrice's guitarist being a big Metallica fan. Yeah.
All right. Had to take a moment. yeah, so I cannot deny that Metallica is easily one of the most important metal bands to ever exist.
Yeah. So I think we're all in agreement on that. So they
we
also...
We don't need to explain.
No, I don't
Metallica
feel like we have
did.
To explain
yeah.
that to them. Tyler did it well by saying, hey, I've got multiple bands on my arm that if it wasn't for Metallica, they wouldn't exist. So,
yep.
Slipknot. So I struggle with this one because I can totally see why people would think that, because we said it a lot especially when we were younger, Preston. Slipknot carried metal, like heavy metal music through the 90s and early 2000s when it was nothing but dad rock.
Yep.
Now there was the metalcore scene that was coming to life.
You said when, I'm sorry?
Like the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, you had new metal that was developing, but somehow Slipknot took it by storm. But yeah.
Well, and I've said before, I don't think Slipknot is new metal.
Right,
I just think
right.
So we used to say that Slipknot carried real, just straight up heavy metal through that time period, because you had the rise of dad rock.
You're
coming off post grunge,
yep.
still the remnants of that coming into dad rock, and then you had Slipknot that was like if Pantera and fucking Rob Zombie had a baby. Like, that was just kind of the vibe that they had, and it was extremely important for that time period. So I think that they're definitely one of the most iconic and popular and, yes, important bands of all time, but their span of influence, I don't know.
So that's where I'll challenge you there in the way I'm thinking of that, because I'm really trying to delve through this in my head. And Slipknot made that, like, scary look of metal cool, if that makes any sense. Like, I know there were bands before that probably had a crazier, different look, but it was like, you would always see, I don't know how old we were then, but what are the outfits that metalheads would wear with, like, the black jeans?
Oh, yeah, and the flared out jeans.
It was always the black
parachute
slip
pants.
The parachute pants and all their piercings and, like, it was always the white Slipknot or the black Slipknot shirt. With Slipknot and white that you would see.
Or the red logo, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it was like something about what they did, they made it cool.
If you ever
like,
watch the show Letterkenny, they call those people skids.
Skids.
I don't know if anybody listens and watches Letterkenny. How are you now?
I love that show.
And I don't know that. Wouldn't you? To me, it feels like Slipknot had started that for people for some reason. Sure. And it was just this circus of sound that, I don't know. I'm sure you can release, a lot of people can release their fucking demons, that stuff,
absolutely.
At the time.
So I guess my point on this is, and by the way, at the end, we're literally all going to have to give our three like most important metal bands.
I figured that was the case.
I'm going to make y'all do this. So I would have to, I'm on the fence with Slipknot. I
definitely see why it was mentioned.
I can't argue too hard with it, but me personally, I would probably not have them in that category.
Hmm. How do you feel about Slipknot being on there?
I do feel that Slipknot is nu metal.
Okay.
I know a lot of people seem to think that nu metal is just Korn.
Mudvayne.
Korn really started it.
Seven Dust.
But, I mean, there's a lot of bands classified as nu metal that don't sound that much like Korn. So, I would say
about Limp Bizkit. I mean, they sound nothing like Korn.
Linkin Park.
What nu metal was this clash of like hip hop and R&B, like rhythms and beats and the flow of how, you know, things are saying and whatnot. Taking that and putting it into a metal format. Basically just taking that and playing it with 7-string guitars with all the gain.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And
bringing a bagpipe out on stage. I seen it live. I seen it live twice. It's fucking amazing.
But I probably wouldn't disagree that Slipknot should be on the list. Because they took what, like, Korn and them were doing, and they made it really fucking metal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what brought so many, like, old-school metalheads, people that were listening to things like Metallica and thrash metal and stuff, brought some of those fans over to kind of the new metal side of things. Like, think of Scotty. He grew up very much thrash metal,
and then he discovered
Slipknot, and then it was, now he's a new metal fan, then he starts branching out into other types of metal, because new metal really, I would say, has more influence on today's metalcore than, you know, the thrashy stuff does.
Yeah, I could see that.
Mm-hmm. So,
because of the rhythm.
And there was a
because
certain
of the rhythm, yep.
There's
a little thrash in there. Slipknot proved it.
I think there was some thrashy shit.
Especially with thrash metal and Metallica, there was a level of angst that wasn't in hair metal and shit like that.
Yeah, it was angry.
But then it was like a Slipknot style band, and specifically Slipknot was like another level of angst.
Anger.
It was like something new, but it had that same angst that people like to surround themselves in.
I think that's new metal in general.
But if I could sum up why I agree they should be on the list, it's because you had Korn over here, straight nu metal, and then you have all these millions of thrash metal heads.
Mm-hmm.
And then Slipknot was like right here.
Yeah.
And just brought everyone together.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yep. Yep.
That's when you put it like that. It makes a lot of sense, and I would really have a hard time arguing against that. So,
I'm a good arguer.
Okay, so last but not least, is Linkin Park. And this is where I get a little lost.
And I want the listeners to know, I want their opinions on this as well. So comment or whatever.
Let me just say, I fucking love Linkin Park. Always have. I mean, I've loved them since I was a kid. But I just don't really get this one because, I mean, who's Linkin Park influenced?
So,
you know, and it's just, I just don't know. I'm genuinely asking, but, you know, while I think Linkin Park was revolutionary and one of the best bands of their time and continue to be incredibly popular, and, you know, the loss of Chester, I think, is one of the biggest losses in the metal community. But I just struggle with them being in that top three most important all time.
Most important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I see why you're baffled here, and I'm kind of baffled. Baffled's not the word. You're right.
Head. I'm like, hmm?
Yeah, baffled's not the word. Conflicted.
Yeah.
I see where you're conflicted, and I go back to a personal experience with me, and I've mentioned on the show a couple times when I was a kid, because I was in sports and specifically into basketball, I was mainly into hip-hop music. Now, always background music was hair metal. You know, when I was around Dad, it was hair metal. When I was around Mom, it was Cinderella bands. I guess you could say hair metal, but more ballady stuff. But what I was listening to growing up as a kid, even I would say second grade on, was hip-hop and R&B based stuff. And I remember when I was a kid, Linkin Park had came around, and I don't know when it was, but it was either...
Meteora was like 2002 or 2003,
okay. Yeah, I just remember being probably 7, 8, maybe not. Yeah, 7, 8, 9, maybe 10, 11, whatever. Hearing that mix of hip-hop and rock music.
Mm-hmm.
And I fucking loved it.
And it was different than like hip-hop and rock.
Yeah, and keep in mind, all the metal...
Because there was that angst with Linkin Park.
Yes, yeah. Keep in mind, all the metal and the rock was background noise to me at this time. I never really delved into it. But that mix of rap and rock, it was just something I absolutely loved because they wrote good choruses. There was that level of angst that we talk about. And then the other dude, the rapping part.
Mike, yep.
Yeah, it shot me into rock music. And I guess I didn't realize it, but I'm like, they might be one of the most influential bands ever on me because of what it got me into. It made me want to listen. Yeah, it made me want to listen to more rock music and then more metal music and all that.
Everything's a bridge.
Yeah, so I see where they said one of the most important metal bands, because a kid like me that, I wouldn't say that I didn't like metal at the time, but just it was background music once again that, I mean, here I am nowadays a full-blown metalhead, and first band that probably did that for me was Linkin Park.
The reason Tyler, I don't want to get in front of you too much here, but the reason I struggle with it so much is the quote is three most important metal bands, right?
Mm-hmm.
They would have just said three most important bands or rock and metal bands. Because when I really think deep about metal, and we'll get to it when I name my top three, but when I think metal, I'm thinking metal.
I mean, dude. Hybrid Theory and Meteora, those were heavy, dude.
I mean, those are metal albums.
That's heavy shit.
But I'll get to it. I don't want to dive too deep into it. But Tyler, go ahead, buddy.
I think of them as a metal band because of those
two
albums.
I do too, but when I name my top three, you'll get what I mean.
Okay.
So first, on that note, I will say I do not agree with them being on that list. Because they were only metal for their first two albums, and then they went more towards the
mainstream
R&B, kind of hip hop,
rocky
sort of rocky ish stuff. I don't know. That was not metal as fuck, bro.
No, Meteora and Hybrid Theory.
But those two albums, I cannot listen to either of those albums and drive.
No.
because I will find myself going like 100 in a 55.
Yep.
Bro, I listen to
it makes
on a
me want
to
drive
time.
Fast, makes me just want to rage.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
That's metal as fuck. That's
metal as
fuck.
Metal as fuck, dude.
To this day.
So they're a fucking metal band.
They were a metal band. Now, I can see why this person would say they are up there, though, because they kind of did the same thing that I was saying with Slipknot, where Slipknot brought two genres of music together, and I think Linkin Park did a really good job of contributing to that. What I would say is that they weren't the first.
Yeah.
They were just maybe the more appeasing to the...
Were they the best?
Hip-hop side and R&B side and stuff. Because Limp Bizkit was doing it first.
Mm-hmm.
He was just...
Did Linkin Park do it better?
That,
for sure.
Yeah, well,
Linkin Park did
it
better.
They had a more a bigger influence, I would say.
For sure. And none of their members are hated.
Exactly. And that's what I was saying is, or getting to say, is that people just didn't like Fred Durst because he was such a cocky person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he wasn't a great person and he was unapologetically himself. I don't know.
Unapologetically Fred.
Jesus Christ.
But, they did an amazing job mixing, you know, rap and metal, and that's why they're considered new metal.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but I'm telling you,
I think Linkin Park reached a wider range than Limp Bizkit, and that's why I would say it is fair to say
I think they should be on the list.
It is fair to argue that they are
really
on the list. I
just think a personal experience and what they did for me into rock and metal music, they're on my list.
Oh, dude, when I heard...
They're on my list.
What was that one big single?
I was listening to 50 Cent fucking with a BB gun out the window, and somehow these dudes made me want to be a metalhead.
So, you would then have two of the three on your list, so let's jump into it. Who's your
third? I know it may be... that is a very controversial take, but for me, they're Linkin
Park. So you
Park's
would have Metallica?
For me.
I could almost tell you who your third would be, but I'm not going to.
Don't tell
me, come to it, because it's...
I mean, have you summed up your part about Linkin Park? I kind of cut you off, but...
Oh, I was just looking up which song it was, but I remember being a little kid when In The End was coming out.
In The End, was it One
and
Step
it was on
Closer that
MTV,
was with it?
Because that was the only way I really heard music.
Yeah.
You know, I was a fucking kid in a house full of women. I had no control over the radio in the car.
Right.
How dare I assume that I can change the channel from fucking NSYNC and Backstreet Boys.
Now, don't be hating on NSYNC.
Hey, well, you know, I got a little appreciation for them. What's up? What's up? You know, they cool and all, but like...
they cool and all.
I wanted to listen to In The End. I wanted to listen to rock.
Yeah, and something about Chester was just so fucking cool.
Yes.
He's just
absolutely
so fucking cool, man.
Absolutely.
It's like they made it cool.
He was
they just awesome. Felt cool.
Yeah, pretty great. So, do you know your, like, three most important metal bands of all time? Or do you want me to go ahead, because I know mine?
Go ahead.
Okay. So, I agreed with Metallica. That one goes without saying. My next two might make you scratch your head. I don't know. Number two is Alice in Chains. And I'll explain them both in a minute. Number three is As I Lay Dying. Alice in Chains, because when we talked about how Slipknot was basically in the middle of two genres and was able to bring both of them together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Alice in Chains was the same thing in the 90s. Because when you think of grunge, or at least when I think of grunge, you know, there's other bands that pop into my head, like Nirvana, like Pearl Jam, like, you name
Stone
them.
Stone Temple
Pilots.
Pilots.
Yeah, you name them. And then there was Alice in Chains. And then when you think of heavy metal in the 90s, you think of Megadeth, you think of Pantera, you think of shit like that. And Alice in Chains was somewhere in the middle. They had the grungy lyrics, the grungy feel, the attitude, the way they dressed. They were from Seattle, all that stuff. But then their music was straight up heavy metal. Like Jerry Cantrell is one of my top five favorite guitarists of all time. So Alice in Chains was able to fuse, just like Slipknot, two different genres and two different fan bases together and create some of the most popular to this day music. And Alice in Chains spawned so many bands in that post-grunge era. And there's so many dad rock. Like, go ask Ben Burnley from Breaking Benjamin who
right.
his, you know, one of his number one influences is or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's my take on Alice in Chains. When I say As I Lay Dying, 90% of the bands that I listen to today would not be around if it wasn't for Shadows Are Security. That album from them is arguably the most influential metalcore album ever. And I have to thank them just as much as I have to thank Metallica for all the bands that I listen to today.
Mm-hmm.
Because their style, and especially some of the more aggressive bands,
yeah. just,
you know, not melodic metalcore. You know, the more like Polaris and wow, I'm drawing huge blank, Moths, you know, so many bands like that, that are just so fucking pissed off, like real straight up metalcore.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's, in my opinion, a lot of that comes from As I Lay Dying. So that's my three.
I see what you're saying.
Do you think I'm way out of left field on any of those?
So my only take...
I think you're out on Alice in Chains just a
little
bit.
I do too. So my take on As I Lay Dying, and I don't know...
You don't have to go too deep, because I want to hear your guys' too.
Yeah. I understand that Slipknot was not metalcore, but it's like, because of their all-over-the-place style and their speed, they started what... They started the As I Lay Dying. Like, As I Lay Dying, I would assume it's a big influence of theirs.
I would disagree. I really would, because I think that As I Lay Dying took a lot more influence from bands like Pantera that were more on that hardcore side.
And some Metallica, of course.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
With their speed.
Yeah.
So thrash, for bands like As I Lay Dying and Killswitch and Bullet, all those guys have said it multiple times, their biggest influence was Metallica.
Yeah.
So, but then you had like Pantera with that super aggressive attitude and Phil Anselmo's growl, that kind of harsh vocal style, which there were bands that were screaming long before.
Yeah,
As I Lay Dying. I mean,
right.
You go back to like 80s, 90s death metal.
Yeah.
Those dudes were all doing that shit. That's all it was. But so I mean, I'm sure that they probably got a little bit of influence from Slipknot, but Slipknot wasn't around that much longer before bands like As I Lay Dying and Killswitch and all those guys started. I mean, All That Remains put out an album in the 90s, bro.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
that's true.
They weren't around
true.
Long enough to be like, oh, these dudes slap. Or Slipknot, you know, didn't really break out into mainstream success until the Subliminal versions, which was in, like, 2003.
Yeah.
Now, their first couple albums were still really popular in the underground.
What year
scene.
Was the As I Lay Dying album?
Shadows Are Security. Yeah. That one's 2005. That's not their first album, though.
Right.
So, yeah, 2005. 2005 was a huge year for that. I mean, that's when Fall of Ideals came out. That's when Killswitch put out. It was either The End of Heartache or the one right after that. I think it was, it was one of those albums, The End of Heartache and then the one right after that. But Trivium put out Ascendancy in 2005, I'm pretty sure. So that was a huge year for metalcore. But I'm getting too deep into the wormhole.
No, that's tough. Fuck.
Tyler, you said something about Alice in Chains. You feel like I'm a little out on that.
I just don't think they are.
And this is one of your favorite bands, too. This is interesting.
I don't think it's metal. I can see where you can get it from, you know, Jerry being pretty metal himself. But I don't know that I could really call him metal.
Sure, I get that.
Yeah,
it was very grunge.
Yeah,
and I've been diving into a lot of the old grunge this past week. We talked about that a little bit earlier.
I have two, which is funny you say that. I've been listening to a lot of grunge too.
But you know, Alice in Chains is really in line on their sound with, you know, Soundgarden and Stone Temple Pilots. Temple of the Dog, stuff like that.
Yeah, I just, for me, they were always more metal. It's
because of Jerry's guitar tone.
It is Jerry's tone. You know, many of those riffs off of the Facelift album are just fucking disgusting. And it's just, and again, that's, you know, one album I know, but, you know, Dirt's got some heavy ass shit on it too. And, but Dirt is more of a grunge record. Facelift is more of a metal record. And that's my favorite Alice in Chains album. Well, actually, Jar of Flies is the acoustic one. But, you know, for me, I've always just considered them, in my mind's eye, a metal band. And I'm sure that, you know, the genre Nazis will come after me for that, and that's fine. But it just, in my personal mind, Alice in Chains has always been a metal band, a grunge metal band for me. So
they did something that was different. They did something that was different. It always felt, outside the box.
It was different than Pearl Jam. It was different than STP. Yeah. It was just, it was different. Yep. So
outside like a man in the box.
Yeah, exactly. Preston, what's your whoever wants to go first? I want to hear y'all's top three. Preston, that
dude,
I don't fucking know. I can't really.
Metallica, dude, the Linkin Park thing. That's
y'all.
Got
you
me,
already spoke it into existence.
It's
you said
got me
on
torn
it.
Like Creed.
Nope,
bud.
You said they're already on it.
Yeah, they're on it. Ooh, because I know what they did for my personal experience for me.
I know what your third one is. I'm ashamed that you don't know it. You want me to say it, and you'd be like, "Oh yeah, that's
is it Killswitch?"
No, you're close.
It's not All That Remains.
Oh, that's what I was thinking.
No, because I don't think they had the impact that a Killswitch or an As I Lay Dying
had. Or an
As I
Lay Dying
did.
Yeah. That's fair.
Are we talking? We're just saying who
in
we think.
In your mind, the most important three metal bands of all time.
God. Linkin Park, Metallica. I see why they put Slipknot on that list,
it's
too.
It's a tough
dude.
One to really argue.
Oh, my
that one
God.
I think is way tougher to argue than Linkin Park.
I just know what Linkin Park did for me as a kid.
So you've got, and again, this is, it's all personal, it's all subjective.
And I'm sure there's a lot of people that can relate.
I'll figure it out.
I probably didn't do a good job of putting it into words. Like, I probably didn't do a good job of putting it into words, like why I felt as if they were one of the most influential metal bands, but if they can relate to my personal experience.
It's not influential, it's most important.
Yeah, most important, or whatever, yeah. Fuck, dude. I would say Killswitch only because I discovered and was into Killswitch before I was As I Lay Dying.
And I was too, but I think that for me personally, I just put As I Lay Dying on such a pedestal for everything that they've done for the genre. Yeah. And Killswitch did just as much.
Just as much.
So it's not, you know, taken away from, you know, either one of those guys. But Tyler?
That's hard, dude.
His is going to be Metallica, Nickelback. I quit. Fuck this podcast. Fuck this podcast. Talking about Nickelback once is bad enough.
Look.
You say
I think
stupid ass band that don't make sense, I'm throwing my drink at you.
He'll be like, I really think they push his glasses up. Like, what did Ryan say about Polyphia fans? They're the most dick stroking, nerdy. I don't know where the clit is.
All
right, it's not going to be me, man. I think you would have to take it way further back, man,
and go to
You would have
Sabbath,
to say
to,
something like Black Sabbath or something like that, because
And that's what a lot of the arguments. That's what a lot of the arguments on Twitter were. With so many people were like, "What about Sabbath? What about Sabbath? What about Sabbath?" And, yeah, for sure, but even they didn't have as big of an influence as Metallica. And if it wasn't for Black Sabbath, there wouldn't be Metallica, so I get
that. Yeah,
but,
like, what bands got into metal because of Sabbath? There's a lot.
I think there's a lot less bands back in the day than there is now.
I think you have to consider the bands that started metal.
You do.
And so that's why I would say you would have to take it back, and you'd have to say someone like Sabbath or some of those metal bands in that era. Again,
yeah,
I'm not
Saxon,
in
Deep Purple.
Yeah, I'm not super educated on that time period of metal music because it's just not something I listen to.
Right.
Dio. All right, he got some jams, bro.
Ronnie James Dio. We were obsessed with him.
Yes, we were.
But You would have to say something like that. And so that's why I think it's so crazy that they would say Linkin Park over some of these bands way back when. Sure. But I think Slipknot has a strong argument, and Metallica has an undeniable slot.
Yeah, I think when you talk about the Mount Rushmore of metal, you just go ahead and pencil in Metallica. You just go ahead and put them in it.
And I would
whether you like
far,
them or not.
Whether you like them or not.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Going through my grunge, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think grunge would have happened without James Hetfield.
No. I'm so glad you said that because no. Not at all, bro.
Because if you listen to a lot of grunge music, like the music itself is, it's kind of metal.
Yeah.
It's just, it doesn't have those heavy, girthy tones like the metal bands were using other than Alice in Chains. Alice in Chains was using that tone. That's why I can definitely see why you would call them a metal band.
Yeah.
They did but not, without, Gary never had a fuzzy tone.
But without a band like Metallica that was not screaming.
No.
He was singing.
Yeah!
And he was giving these very aggressive vocals. I don't think you would have had the type of vocals that you had in grunge. I don't think you would have had the style of music being played in that genre. Without Metallica, and so I would say Metallica created grunge.
Yeah, and let's dive into the lyrics because you want to talk about James Hetfield. Well, you know he's writing most of these lyrics. Go listen to "And Justice for All." I mean, any of the first, from "Ride the Lightning" through "And Justice for All." So many of those songs are about government and politics and war
and
all of that. Well, what's grunge sing about a lot? When you think about a lot of those bands, they're singing, like, go listen to Rooster. What's that song about? It's about war sucking.
Yep.
So they made it cool to talk about something other than parties and women and like cars and dumb shit.
Yeah.
They made it cool to talk about stuff other than that was just cool to listen to. Made it cool to listen to other shit.
Yeah.
And stuff with a deeper message. You know, I'll give dude credit where credit's due. He's no bitch when it comes to writing lyrics.
I also got to give credit to Dave Mustaine because Megadeth has done so much, like, you know, corrupt government, political, war, all those kinds of things in their song structure for 30, 40 years. So very similar to Metallica in that sense, just didn't have as big of a span of influence, but no, I'm glad you said something about that. Cause I do not think that there would be grunge without Metallica.
That is weird to think though, at the same time, like on the surface.
Yeah.
It's like Metallica created grunge. What?
Yeah. What?
What
do you mean? They're completely different.
I don't like listening to Metallica much. I did growing up, but I think I clumped it in with all of the 80s and
you did wrong,
70s
boy.
And 80s that
you
I started playing music to. And I kind of threw all that away when I found grunge and things like Smile Empty Soul and stuff. But, you know, like I said, credit where credit's due. I'll never take away from what Metallica's done for music and their impact on a lot more people than I'll ever touch.
Sure.
So shout out State of the Scene podcast for that topic because when Kyler sent that over to me, I was immediately thrilled and wanted to talk about that on the show. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Don't want to definitely want to make sure we mention them because that is from State of the Scene. So they're pretty damn popular. So they put a topic out there on Twitter today and we figured we'd talk about it on here. So okay. Well, that's my hot take. Next.
Go ahead, Preston.
You said you had a humdinger of one.
I don't know that it's a humdinger of one. No.
You got a hell of a holler.
To us, it's not to us guys in here. It's not going to be a hot take whatsoever because you're going to say, "Well, duh." But there's a lot of fucking listeners.
I'm gonna fight you just because
there's a lot of listeners out there that love this band. And I tell you what,
I'll fight.
Y'all are fucking wrong. Reason being, I was driving in my car today. Figured I'd give a band a chance again. You know how you give a band a second, third chance every now and then. I ain't listened to those guys in forever.
Yeah.
Oh, Amity Affliction.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
There are four songs that they have dropped on this new album that they got coming out. It's fucking putrid. Fucking horrible.
Bro, I'm so glad you said that.
It's like they heard people were bitching at them to get heavy again or something, or get creative, and all they did were blast beats and that other guy sang the choruses, and it was fucking horrible. Every single song.
I know that horrible. My guy Jake at Metalcore Highlights is listening to this right now.
He's
going,
a big fan,
fuck,
isn't he?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay. Thank God.
Fucking thank you.
Thank you, Jake.
Because, dude, man, those...
They're bad.
Chasing Ghosts, the album that had Pits, Let the Ocean Take Me, those two records, there was a third one, were really fucking good. They were really good.
Oh, I was obsessed with
yes.
them. Yes. I was
and
obsessed
I'm like,
with
oh,
them.
My God, finally another metalcore band yep. that's putting out good music. This is the shit. And then they can't just, I mean, went to fucking hell in a handbasket, bro.
Dude,
I haven't listened to any of
they
the
lost
shit
all creativity. Like, they started creating the same song after song
so
after song, and it was
fucking
like,
overrated,
well, let's just
bro.
Keep fucking doing it.
They're so fucking overrated.
I'll do it again.
I'll fucking do it again. Uncle Ruckus in this bitch.
He's crying. I see the tears.
Bro, they had to say that like another three. They had to say that like another 300 fucking times because they've stuck
bro,
for about 8 fucking years.
Their label was
they're
probably
horrible.
Like, "Look, we need another song." Well,
and that dude screamed,
"Do it again."
Jesus, that dude.
Sorry,
that dude scream is like. Fingernails.
Oh my God,
bro.
It's fucking horrible.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
You'll do just, it again.
I fucking hate. I hate shitting on bands, but like
I don't want to shit on them either. But
you
dude,
suck,
it
dude.
It sucks.
Which I shit on Ghost and Sleep Token the other day. So I mean, I guess I'll just continue my trend.
And people probably say the same about our music, and that's
probably,
okay.
And that's
but,
fine, but
fuck, dude, it's horrible. It is absolutely
but
horrible.
It's so bad. I none of us in here are going to disagree with you, but I'm sure some of the listeners will probably never listen to us again because the Amity Affliction.
They're
is,
probably
the Amity,
Amity
Affliction,
lovers.
If I listen to it,
they
afflicts
run deep,
my fucking eardrums.
They run deep, lovers of Amity, man. Probably pissed off quite a few there,
that's
but
fine. That's,
they need to reevaluate their taste in fucking metal music because that
get
shit
controversial
is horrible.
At some points. Tyler, do you have anything else to add to that one?
I'd never really listened to them.
You're lucky. I mean, the first those albums I mentioned are pretty
yeah, they're good.
You'll have to send them to me. I never really got into them.
I remember loving Let the Ocean Take Me.
When I first heard them, it was on 99.7 The Blitz,
which is only a bad sign.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
There was a lot of stuff I heard on there that I was just like, I'm just not okay with this.
Yeah,
and but they would once in a while come through with a little bit of grunge, you know. Mm-hmm. I'd be happy with that, but
then they played Imagine Dragons.
Here's Michael Bublé.
I don't think they ever played Imagine
played nothing
Dragons.
Nothing but metal.
But yeah, that's basically what it was. It's a butt rock station.
You're listening to 93.4 Hard Rock Radio.
I used to love it. I used to love it. And then Apple Music happened, and I left the building.
Yeah.
But no,
y'all,
whenever...
I got a headache from laughing so damn hard.
Not great. Not great.
But in regards to Amity.
No, that's all I have to say. I really didn't listen to him, so I can't really speak to it.
Man, I'm not talking about those guys personally or anything,
butt,
but
bro.
That shit fucking
their
sucks.
Yeah,
it is horrible.
It's not good.
It's like if I tried to scream what it would fucking sound like.
That's worse.
Yeah.
It's like if I recorded my 6-month-old. It's bad. It's bad. Tyler. What's your hot take, buddy? Let's see if we can piss more people off.
All right, boys.
Oh, great. Here we go.
We're going in. So, there's not enough positivity in metal.
In
regards to lyrics or...
The vibe around it.
So, we've talked on this show about why we listen to metal. Had a really good conversation with Derek. And we've had conversations, just the three of us, and then also with some other guests that have come on, Ryan and Scotty, but all of our stories are pretty well the same, man. It was metal was this thing that allowed us to release our demons, mm-hmm. you know, help think through heavy shit that we are dealing with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Derek said, the soundtrack for your story mm-hmm. kind of thing. But one thing that is backed by science is that the music you listen to heavily affects your mood.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
And so a lot of metal is not good mood shit. Like, if you're in a bad mood, it can help you work through that so that you can be in a better mood, you know, when you get to work or whatever it is. But it is not positive shit to listen to
mm-hmm.
on a regular basis. And I think that there could be an issue of, you know, a lot of people that listen to metal being upset about this, that, or whatever might be due to the music that they're listening to and creating this negative outlook on everything else around them.
Mm.
Well, I think this is a great topic because it's always a good idea to keep yourself in check, right? And that's kind of what this topic is, yeah, we talk about how great metal music is and it's, you know, the best part of our lives and all this shit. But we do have to take a step back sometimes and analyze the flaws.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that definitely is one of them. Man, a lot of lyrics are dark. A lot of the songs are dark. It's anger. It's frustration. It's angst. It's loss. It's all of those things. And, yeah, and too much of anything can be a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's why
I feel like
when we go back to our conversation about ballads, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those are a huge release of emotion. And, you know, I think we could use more of those in metal. We could just use some more positive. That's why I think I enjoy like Christian metalcore so much, because even if I don't particularly care about, you know, the message, I still know that it's positive and the words are positive.
I feel good when I listen to Wolves at the Gate.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a religious person at all.
No, you're not. So, and I feel good listening to them, and not because of the religious piece of it, but just because the way the song flows and makes me feel.
Yeah.
And listening to the lyrics. So I think it's always good to kind of take a step back and analyze our culture, our, you know, the culture that is metal music. And say, hey, we got to remember to kind of keep ourselves in line and keep ourselves in check here. So, no, it's a great point.
You know, I definitely see where you're coming from there, and I agree to a point. But then it's like when Like Moths to Flames dropped that new song, or when Polaris dropped their last album, or other bands that I enjoy, metal bands that I enjoy, dropped their latest stuff that I enjoyed, like, I remember being elated. Like, the smile on my face while I was listening to that stuff was ear to ear.
Yeah.
So that's where a part of me is like,
no, and
I agree, but then...
And I'm not saying that that isn't real and that feeling isn't real. I think if I can speak for Tyler a little bit here, what he's saying is that...
Translate.
For so many years...
Yeah, good job at it.
For so many years, metal has just been thought of and looked at as dark. And it goes back to one of the very first episodes mm-hmm. where we talk about, you know, metalheads are uneducated devil worshipers. That stigma is still around. And
yeah.
it can be like a cloud hanging over the community. And we in the community don't always realize the way that it looks to somebody else, whether we care or not or should care or not. We don't always see it from the outside looking in. And I think what Tyler's trying to get us to do is to walk outside and look
yeah.
inside at the culture from an outsider's
yeah,
perspective.
Okay.
So that's an interesting take. I love it. But I was talking more in the sense of, I think there are listeners out there, and I catch myself doing it too, listening to a whole lot of metal, listening to the messages that are being portrayed, and it kind of makes me think of these negative thoughts and everything, and then I can sometimes carry that negativity into other things that I'm doing, be it at work or, you know, I'm probably not going to listen to a lot of metal on my way to a social event.
Sure.
Probably not going to do that. Yeah. Unless I'm going to a metal concert.
I'm the complete opposite.
Then we're going to listen to Norma Jean the whole way there. We're going to watch Norma Jean play, and then we're going to listen to Norma Jean all the way back. It's going to be fun. But, you know, aside from that, it's like there's this fine line that you have to balance where, yes, when a new metal album hits, I get really excited because I love the music and I love the style and the sound of it. And I really just keep playing it and keep playing it. And I start listening to the message and I'm hearing this negative message, or it's a negative topic. And then I'm starting to carry that negativity into other facets of my life. And I think there's a lot of metalheads out there that might be creating some turmoil for themselves that doesn't need to be there.
Yeah.
And that's why I listen to things like reggae and alternative, and I'll switch to some dad rock because I'm, you know, I'm a dad. So like, it's kind of a requirement now that my new balances.
I got something in the mail when my son was born. I said, hey, X number of hours of dad rock per week. Okay.
Creed it is. Cool. All right.
Creed it is. Like, shut up in there. No, I'm that one will never die either.
No.
It's Scott Stapp, we trust.
Yes. We need to get a banner.
I want to put that on our band banner because he is like our God.
Might get us some attention.
Good or bad.
Yeah.
You need to start playing in Dallas Cowboy jerseys. Flying around. Shut up and down.
Doing this with the mic. Like,
get a big fan to blow your hair and like lean into it. I can't
find a rhyme. Rip your fucking shirt off.
Shirt's open, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yep. My God.
Yep. We found our gateway, buddy.
Yes. The fans are going to quit listening because I've been singing. It's going to... Whoopsie. At least I'm not singing the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse
one more
song that's stuck
one
in
more
my head.
One more.
One more what?
With arms wide open. Under the sunlight. So, anyway, back to the topic at hand.
God, I love Creed.
We're all going to jam and
I
cry to some
Creed, bro.
Once we stop recording here. Yeah. But, so if I could kind of sum up my hot take, it's that I think there's too much negativity, not enough positive messaging in metal music. You know, it would be nice to hear 9 songs of I Want to Kill People.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe one song of, hey,
maybe don't kill people. Yeah.
It's an idea. Maybe, you know, we got our aggression out the previous 9 songs. Let's finish it out with something uplifting.
No, I would agree with that. That's a valid point. Well, it's always fun getting back in here and just having the three of us shoot the shit like old times. And I love having our guests on, but sometimes it's fun for the three of us just to get back in and
just riff
it. And just riff it. Just come up with some topics and discuss amongst the three of us. And hopefully any up-and-coming artists that have been listening have enjoyed the conversation we had in the first segment, you know, talking about new recordings and things like that. And hope all you other listeners have enjoyed the conversation as well. So as a reminder, wherever you may be listening, thank you. If you're listening on Spotify, Google, Apple, whichever, and you want more right now, please feel free to jump over to our Patreon page at TSIS Podcast, or just type in the Screaming Idiots Show and you can subscribe to our Backstage Pass for $5. It's not that much. We're using anything from that we make off of that to further improve this show, whether that is better equipment, paying and incentivizing some guests that may be a long ways away to come on the show, helping out with things like that. So if you're interested in that, hop over on Patreon and get all of our content and drink it through the fire hose.
Promo code is BDSM. Also,
yes.
Son of a bitch. I've been waiting to say that for 30 seconds.
I can see him over there all fucking giddy.
Pick me, pick me.
Dude looked like he had to take a shit.
Yeah. So
pick me, pick
obviously,
me.
Obviously we're recording season two, you know, over a period of time. If you're listening to this by now, we should be, you know, taking your t-shirt orders. By now we'll have the design out. You guys will know what it looks like. Hope you love it. Hope you want to wear them and represent. And if you do, please just reach out to us on any of our social media platforms. Let us know the sizes you want and we'll get you taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Go follow all the social media accounts. Like I said, we're on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. All of it is at TSIS Podcast, or you can just search The Screaming Idiot Show. We're constantly putting out content for you guys, both in long podcast form and shorts and reels, bonus content on Patreon. We're trying to cover all our bases. So go follow all of our social media accounts. Tell a friend, tell a family member. Come listen to us. Come hang out with us. Be a part of the metal brotherhood that is The Screaming Idiots Show. And until next time, we are The Screaming Idiots.
Peace, love, dove.